Many people have a desire to enter the world of investing, whether it be through real estate, stocks, or entrepreneurship. However, people often face self-doubt, a limited belief system, or simply a lack of knowledge to put behind their ambition. It's easier than you think to overcome these obstacles if you know exactly what's holding you back. Partner with Andre to forge new neurological pathways that unlock breakthrough strategies for income generation, reshape your belief systems, and construct your desired life. With over 15 years of experience in finance and a decade devoted to teaching wealth preservation, these achievements are no mere coincidence. One thing is clear, if others have done it, you can too. Start your complimentary action plan today at www.andrestewartauthor.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. If you've been searching for ways to break free from the 9-to-5 grind, scale or start your own business, generate passive income, or gain insights from others who have achieved their desired lifestyle, get ready. Prepare to be inspired as we provide you with invaluable tips, resources, and firsthand experiences from Andre and other industry experts who have accomplished remarkable things in their respective fields. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast, your roadmap to success. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today I'm happy to bring a guest who's familiar with the Bitcoin background or digital assets, I would say. I kind of wanted to, you know, bring someone on that had that background because I think crypto just shot up to 34,000 and it was trending at like 27 and like it was going down. So I'm happy to bring Adam on. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing well, thanks, Andre. Great to be here.
Adam has a really good background, man. He did digital assets for a while, but he learned his lesson and stuck with four. So today we're just going to talk about the big four that he likes. We're also going to dive into some of the things that he's doing in the Cayman Islands, which I think is good and beneficial for people to know about. So Adam Reed, man, give us a little bit about your background and tell us how you got started in digital assets.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So I grew up in Canada, and that's relevant because I met my co-founder of the business, who's actually from Venezuela. So a lot of the things that we're building on are kind of from the relationship and the conversations that we are having about the differences that, and experiences we had with money. My co-founder growing up in Venezuela, myself growing up in Canada. My personal background is in engineering, and we met at business school. So I have a mechanical engineering background, and I spent 10 years investing in renewable power projects before getting into the digital asset space, and got into Bitcoin because at the time of my initial interest, energy storage was a big deal. And so the idea of, you know, supporting more intermittent renewable resources on the grid required battery storage or other types of ways to store electricity. And even though it's pretty different, I saw an interesting relationship between Bitcoin as a means to store electricity through Bitcoin mining, basically taking that intermittent value that was produced on the grid, storing it for a later date. It was a form of energy storage, at least how I analyzed it. And so got into it again through my co-founder, through who was into it years before that, through mining in Venezuela, and set up some of the first mines in Canada. And then got into the current platform because we had challenges obtaining financing for our own Bitcoin mining. And so like many businesses, created the solution for our own problem. And then that became the new opportunity that we were working on.
I like it, man. And then the name of your platform is Ledin, correct?
Exactly. So we focus on providing lending and other types of savings products for the digital asset space.
So then I'm curious, there's a couple of different lending platforms out there. I can't think of the name of them off the top of my head, but what is the difference between you and those other crypto platforms? I know you know that question's coming, but what's the biggest difference between you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the ironic piece to that question is we're one of the few digital asset lenders that are still around. So we made it through the tumultuous 2022 issues in the space. That's just through more prudent risk management. We kept things really, really simple. One of our favorite sayings in the company is the best restaurants have the smallest menu. So we just have like a really, really kind of straightforward way to operate the business. You know, keep things simple, both for our clients externally and then internally how we run the business. So had quite different simplified operations compared to the other digital assets that are around. And the most obvious one you started with this is we only support the four top crypto assets today. So that's Bitcoin. We are adding Ethereum. We've got a new product launching with Ethereum shortly. And then the two major stable coins, USDC and USDT Tether. And so by keeping like a really curated tight list, we don't have to do a lot of complex things. And complexity at times has the likelihood to add risk. And so we try to keep the platform as simple as possible to be as conservative as possible how we manage things.
So with that being said, a lot of people did have, I would say, a lot of money in Bitcoin, but it took a hit. Then it dropped down to about 27. It got down to 16 at some point, and now it's at 34. What's your outlook on that with Bitcoin shooting up? And do you think it's a trend or you think it's something temporary? And then in addition to that, how does someone go about using their assets to get a loan? And what does that look like for someone who has a business and they're trying to get a loan in a business name, but the Bitcoin is in their personal name?
Yeah, happy to answer all that. So I think first to comment on the price, it's all relative, of course, right? So what was your entry point? You know, I think what's interesting about how things work in cycles is price tends to be the best marketer. And so this is true for real estate. This is true for Bitcoin, the digital asset space. It just naturally, people, you know, are interested in things as they think they're losing out on financial opportunities. So when something comes up and rockets really quickly, it brings in a lot of people that gathers interest. No one wants to feel like they're missing out on a financial opportunity. So that brings people in. And because of the speed at which, you know, people rushed into digital assets in 2021, caused a big run up in the price. And then, you know, we did see a correction kind of after the fallout of some fraud that happened in this industry. But, you know, I think the thing is that it wasn't anything to do with Bitcoin. It's to do with a centralized service that was happened to be operating in the Bitcoin space. So I think as things recover from that, people realize the true value, and those that had a use case overall maintain their interest in the space. Things are starting to normalize. And I think now we have the positive news of a potential ETF or ETFs on the horizon. That's going to bring in more masses to the asset class. And that's going to be interesting.
Real quick question.
Yeah.
Do you think the Bitcoin halving, is it this year or is it next year or coming up?
Yeah, it's next year. So it'll be in the just June. After the first quarter, you know, second quarter of next year is the scheduled Bitcoin halving. What's interesting there is you have miners are the biggest sellers of Bitcoin to pay down electricity and other operating expenses to operate their Bitcoin mining. Mm-hmm. So when you have their you know, selling inventory halve, naturally, if the demand is the same, it may cause a price increase. So typically we've seen some run-ups about 6 months before the halving cycles.
Kind of like right now, because December.
Exactly.
Because I said, we talked earlier, I'm in crypto too. And so I've been in them and when the halvings take place, and now it's December coming up, and that'll be, in my opinion, I think they happen around June or July. And you can attest to this. I'm not sure. You're probably more in depth about that than I am, but do you think we're coming up in that cycle now? And that's why the price is starting to trend higher.
Yeah, definitely. And we have the news of the ETF coming. So I think that there's always kind of a new, you know, narrative or things to be excited about, you know, into this cycle. Last time we saw, you know, last cycle, there was more institutional adoption coming in. This time that institutional adoption is there. So a lot of, you know, large companies have already done the research. They're ready to move into this asset class. And so that's the interesting catalyst this time. But yeah, it'll be, I think the exact date is, you know, April of 2024 is the current timing of it. Obviously, it depends on block cycles and things like that, but that's the key timing of it this year.
Let's stay here real fast because we're talking about regulatory, and then you touched on energy and you have an energy background, and then we'll hop back to the lending question later. Do you think SBF situation, and so many people got, you know, screwed over in that situation? I think I even saw he's facing like 100 years, which is crazy. Do you think that situation with SBF is going to cause an issue with people wanting to, or institutions wanting to invest in crypto?
Yeah, I think fortunately, you know, that is behind us. So we're coming up on a year anniversary of when the whole fallout happened with FTX. I think, you know, it takes a while for the headlines to dissipate into details. Mm-hmm. And now I think people are understanding that it was an individual or a group of individuals that this fraud did occur, and it is separate and distinct from Bitcoin. I think the challenge we have overcoming that is he did such a good job, you know, obviously I say that in a cynical way, of creating this narrative of in the mainstream media, right? So he was able to bring in many different celebrities, many different sports figures, and educate people. So I think he did a good job of tying them together. And again, good job in a cynical way. But now we have to kind of pull that apart and say, this is a company operating in an industry. And I think, you know, what happens because anything's new is that gets conflated. So now we're separating that out and saying, no, there's nothing actually wrong with the industry. it's that bad actors within the industry that we need to isolate.
Yeah. And I mean, he, in my opinion, I don't think he was by himself because he had to get that money from somewhere. I mean, he was 24 years old. And so the narrative that did go around him was funded by someone at a large scale because he was on the front of Time, like so many different magazines, you know what I mean? For a young dude. So I don't know. I find that whole thing with him just an interesting situation for someone to do that so fast in short amount of time. And it's got to be on the VCs and other investors too, because they dump all that money into one company, right? You had so many people that were just flowing into his company out of all the other ones. So real quick, since you do have the energy background, and then there's an issue with people in crypto, right? And about the amount of energy that it takes to mine crypto. What's your thoughts on that? Because you do have the energy background and then you do work in Bitcoin now.
Yeah, the interesting thing. So spending 10 years in the renewable power sector, renewables are typically, depending on the type and location, they're put on the grid for economic reasons for the most part. And hydroelectricity, which is by far and large the largest source of renewable power globally, is the lowest cost of energy in most places. Mm-hmm. And so what you see is when you look at where Bitcoin mining is growing, it's an economic game, right? And so you need to put it where it can go anywhere. It needs to be anywhere where there's a basic internet connection. And for that reason, it goes towards the lowest cost of energy. And that happens to be often hydroelectric. And so you see places like, you know, the country of Georgia, China has had historically mining, and, you know, even Texas, where there's natural gas just being flared. So it tends to soak up resources that aren't optimized and aren't utilized. And so that's kind of the misconception of it, is it doesn't really bode well to utilizing, I'd say, you know, at the margin power. At the margin is like a price setting power. It better fits to soaking up underutilized assets. And so I think when you look at the net contribution of it, it's not actually that significant. Although the megawatts are, the actual megawatt hours that it's soaking up would go underutilized if not applied appropriately.
So I'm a firm believer in, you know, the narrative, right? We all know there's a narrative that's told by the media. And then we all know the Green New Deal. We know the energy. We know the whole push behind all of that stuff. Seeing that it's really hard to regulate or prevent people from using crypto, do you think this is part of the strategy? Because there's this narrative that China banned crypto because of the energy. And then New York did the same thing. Do you think there's this going around? Because what you just said makes sense. Do you think that there's a play in place to try to use that as something to regulate the industry since they can't control it?
Yeah, in my opinion, China regulated because of capital controls, in that what you can do with Bitcoin mining is you can utilize local fiat. And so in this case, the local currency within China to buy computers that are Bitcoin miners, and then it produces Bitcoin, which can be exported globally. So you can effectively circumvent capital controls by setting up mining. This was the reason that Bitcoin mining prevailed in places like Venezuela, where electricity is heavily subsidized, where you could again buy machines with local currency and produce effectively global currency. So that's the real regulatory problem. I think that the energy piece is the way that they get it accepted by the public, because nobody wants to feel like their money's being trapped, but that's really what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's what I said too. Like, if you're in this space and you understand, you know what it is. And so They're not going to come out and tell that, but that's what they have to do. And then slide it in on like the USD coin. You know what I mean? I think they tried to slide that in 3 years ago to pass a law on the USD coin whatever digital dollar. Yeah, right. So no one knew about that. But if you follow politics and you follow what's going on, they slid it in I can't think of what it's called, but you know what I'm talking about. They slid it in a bill.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So it's just like, man, it's interesting. So then, do you think crypto's here to stay?
I absolutely do. I think, you know, even within this, you know, last cycle, we've seen, I think the US pull back a bit. I think retail interest pulling back post FTX, but, you know, other markets that we operate in, I think, you know, different use cases. So 70% of blockchain transactions today by value are stablecoin transactions. So I think that's a use case that has really proliferated during the last 24 months. Just the ease of moving dollars in a more frictionless way is massive. And I think that will continue to, I guess, grow. And then I think, you know, Bitcoin, just the fact that it's the same everywhere is really unique, right? That isn't true for gold. That isn't true for real estate. You have something that is truly the same to everyone that uses it globally. And that's very powerful for companies like Ledin to build financial services on.
I like it. Well, we talked about this earlier too. XRP, man, I love XRP. Like when I worked at Silicon Valley Bank for a while, and I remember when XRP first came out, or Ripple, we lost a couple of employees from our office to go work at Ripple. So I knew what was going on. This was in like 2016. So I knew all this before it even happened. I like XRP. I do. I like Ripple just because of how fast it is and what it does. And, you know, Western Union is using it for their payment system. So many people are using it. And I think, in my opinion, they were like the first to start getting into the financial space out of all of them. I think Bitcoin was in there, but it was moving slow. So no one wanted to use it to do transactions. And then Ripple came along and it was super fast. And so then they got hit with this lawsuit about the whole securities thing, which, like we talked about earlier, I think it's coming to an end. I think they're going to win the lawsuit because it doesn't even make sense. It didn't make sense in the first place. So do you think XRP is going to be something like, you know, you got the big four, right? But do you think XRP is going to be Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP? What's your thoughts behind it if they are able to get through this situation?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I've appreciated about watching the Ripple is the amount of pushback they have made for, you know, regulation and making sure that they're supporting the crypto industry that way. I would say I don't know enough about the interworkings of it to comment at a high level, but I'd say the thing that I haven't understood without doing a ton of research on it is, why not just stablecoins? So I think the use case of remittance, I don't understand remitting through a currency that has fluctuating value versus just remitting through a cryptocurrency like a stablecoin that's pegged. So if you're going to move, you know, just on the simple, because I know that it is used a lot for, let's say, you know, moving money between the US and Mexico.
Correct.
So in that example, like I think a blockchain that provides really low transaction fees, putting a stablecoin on that, I would have a hard time figuring out why that wouldn't be kind of superior to it. But again, I'm interested to understand more, learn, and I won't ever knock something until I fully understand it.
Ever wished you had the opportunity to buy a stock like Facebook, Amazon, or Netflix before it went public, or was able to get shares in companies like VC firms and angel investors? Well, here's your chance. Go to investfar.com/invest and reserve a position. For the next 1 to 3 months, InvestFAR is allowed a limited number of low-cost shares be available for friends, family, and its community per SEC regulations before it goes public. Imagine being able to 1,000x or 10,000x your investment, like the top 5%. With exclusive opportunities such as this, positions are limited and the window of time is short. Don't miss your chance. That's INV, as in Victor, estfar.com/invest.
I mean, I argue with that. It's kind of like, in my opinion, because I do a lot of transactions in Colombia with paying employees. And so I might hop on Western Union, or I got to do a transfer. And then it goes from being, I don't know, for $1 is 4,100 pesos, right? Mm-hmm. I can wake up, well, not even wake up, like 3 hours later, I can do that same transaction. It went from 4,100 to 3,900, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get what you're saying about why wouldn't they just use something that kept this currency amount the same, right?
Yeah.
Versus using something like that that's going to fluctuate. So maybe, and this is why I always say, I think that, and this is just my opinion, I think that they're going to try to regulate crypto and turn it into, like, you know how you have stocks? They're going to make it securities. That's what I think. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, but I think that's just the direction that they're going in, so they can tax it and do all these other things, which they're trying to do. What do you think about that? Do you think they're going to try to make it a security? Which some of them are, but do you think they're going to try to make all of them securities and not?
Yeah, I think that the tricky part is, you know, we're in the situation where the technology works globally. To some extent, the marketing is pretty effective globally as well, but the regulatory environment is obviously ring-fenced by country, by state, by province, you know, a whole bunch of different kind of barriers to adoption. But on the flip side of it, there's this massive pie of existing fiat money that's sitting on one side of the fence that's got a regulatory barrier in between to moving it over, right? And so it's like, the cryptocurrency industry can ignore that, but then if you want to move that fiat in and want to, you know, increase the pie for everybody, you kind of have to play ball with it. And so that's where it's like, you know, there's this interesting like interlacing to get things across. I do see it as, I think if you take it too far, you lose a lot of the benefits of it, right? So if it is regulated like a stock and you can't move it across border, you're going to end up with the same problems, right? I think we still really haven't seen the narrative of like, you know, banking the unbanked really become, because that's not, you know, again, there's different barriers that are in the way other than the tech. So that's the piece, is like, I hope we don't take it too far where we kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater trying to get the regulatory right. But I see the need to, if we all want this to succeed, to make sure that everyone understands it so we can get that big pie across the table.
I agree with you. The only other thing I think they're going to do, just because now every country is seeming to come up with their own digital currency. And I think like China, the UK, the US, that's when I think we're going to have that problem, when they get there situated and everybody's is working properly and there's no hitch, no glitches or whatnot. That's when I think they might come out and try to start doing, you know, all kind of crazy things to the crypto space.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we can go down a rabbit hole on the central bank digital issued currencies, but, you know, I definitely have concerns over, you know, privacy and things like that. Yeah. If we take things, you know, too far, I think, you know, we are in a world where the technology does allow you to watch every transaction if that was so the case. But to me, that's just not needed, right? I don't need to know whether you bought a coffee this morning. We do need some, you know, broad level pieces to protect from, you know, terrorist financing and other things like that. But at the same time, you know, we have to be careful about what that censorship can do against like good actors, right? So there's a balance there. And I think that's something that we have to all watch carefully, because things can get overreaching if we're not careful and we don't push back. I'm a big privacy advocate. And I think we can go, there's a scenario where things go pretty badly in that there's just way too much surveillance on how everyone is allocating their day-to-day funds.
Yeah, it won't happen, right? There's going to be a revolt. There's going to be a, for sure, 1,000% there'll be a revolution if that were to take place, because I'm super old school. Like, I don't have really social media on my phone. I don't really use apps like that, right? I'll use them, but I'm not, that's just not me. So I'll be one of those people that are like, no, I'll just stick with cash or I'll move to another country. Like, I'm not doing this. And sure. So that's the thing. Like, when you go to other countries that are just not as advanced technologically, like, go to Colombia, right? They still don't. You still got to use cash in certain parts of the country. So if you don't want to deal with this, this is a first world problem, right? You can go somewhere and it's going to be a while before it even gets there, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, fast forward now with crypto and lending. I'm a lender, so I love the space with financial services. What kind of products do you guys offer? And then how does a person go about using Ledin?
Of course. Yeah. So the first product we ever released was a Bitcoin-backed loan that allows you to maintain your Bitcoin holdings while still accessing a fiat currency for you to spend, invest, you know, reallocate into different asset classes, whatever you'd like to do. And so it's essentially a mortgage for your Bitcoin. Can you maintain the actual asset? You know, if there's price appreciation, that's yours. If there's price depreciation, that's yours too. But that's, you maintain your exposure. It can have, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, depending on your own financial situation, it may have tax planning capabilities as well. So for someone looking to, that holds Bitcoin, considering how do I get access to fiat, this product allows you to borrow against it instead of selling it today, which has some interesting attributes. So that's the first product we ever launched. We've been doing that for 5 years. We've processed over 700 million of retail and high net worth Bitcoin-backed loans. So have done some significant volume and obviously know the product in and out. We also have a yield account. So we have an account that allows you to earn interest on Bitcoin, on stable coins, soon to be ETH as well. And that yield is generated by lending to qualified institutions that do market making in the space. And so that's called our growth account. It pays, you know, different interest depending on the asset, and availability is based on jurisdiction, not available in the US, but available in other markets. We also have a structured product that's available in certain markets that allows you to take a view on the price of Bitcoin in 30, 60, 90 days and say, okay, Bitcoin's trading at 35,000. I would be okay with selling Bitcoin, say if it reached 40,000. And if it does reach that price, you get converted to cash. If it doesn't reach that price, you get paid a yield in Bitcoin for agreeing to that contract term. So that's called our dual cryptocurrency note. And so an interesting way to accumulate more Bitcoin or stable coins over time if you'd like to participate in that. And then we have some basic, I call them more features than products, because they're designed to make the platform easier to use. We have a trade product that allows you to convert between the different growth accounts. So if you're participating in the Bitcoin growth account, you can trade back to USDC or Tether, soon to be other ETH as well. Within that. And then we also have, there's just the ability to we've launched a variation of our Bitcoin backed loan, which is a mortgage, which allows you to collateralize both Bitcoin and real estate to, utilize those two assets. So, again, speaking to the real estate guy, it's kind of combining two worlds. So pretty cool innovation there too.
So that's perfect, man. Cause we talked earlier, I have InvestFAR, and on InvestFAR, we allow people to buy properties using crypto. So with your platform, how could we do that? How could we do that? Because we use BitPay, like I mentioned, but how can we allow someone to get a mortgage, like you just said, and integrate that into what we do in InvestFAR?
Yeah. So what we found was that people were approaching us to use Bitcoin and collateralize it to buy it, but there was a bit of a mismatch as far as the volatility and the tenure that they were looking to utilize the asset for. So what we decided to do was, if you're using the proceeds of the loan to purchase real estate, we could use that as collateral as well. And then it allows us to change the margin call terms and attributes of the Bitcoin backed loan. So in basic math, let's say you're going to buy $1 million worth of real estate. You can do that using $1 million of Bitcoin. We collateralize both the $1 million of Bitcoin and the $1 million of real estate. And now you have $2 million of collateral, and we let you borrow $1 million against that. And then there's some fluctuations. So if the Bitcoin price comes down, we still have the real estate. And so it allows us to provide a little better terms overall by combining those two different types of collateral.
Man, guys, you guys just witnessed the partnership. We're making this happen. After Excellent. We have this call, we have to figure that out, because that's game changing for a lot of people. Yeah. Because the way our platform works now, we use BitPay, and you just have to use your crypto to just buy the asset, right? It's not being able to collateralize it and turn it into a mortgage, yep. which is even better. So. Yes,
exactly. This to get the best of both worlds.
I love it, man. We definitely have to do that. Okay. With that being said, then, what's the maximum loan amount that someone can do then?
To date, our max is approximately 3 million, but we can go a little bit higher. We've done loans as high as 5 million. And so that's kind of the average size, but typically that's the kind of size I would say five. We don't really have a set limit, but what we find is that clients like to break up their mortgage or loan amounts into different amounts to be able to manage it a little bit better. But we've done loans as high as 10, 15 million. So again, just top level, I'd say 10, but our average loan size goes all the way down to $500. So that's the unique thing about dealing with Bitcoin is, like, it's the same. And so you can kind of, the size becomes somewhat irrelevant as long as the client is comfortable managing within the terms of that. So,
man, this is going to be game changing. I'm excited. Didn't even know this was going to happen, but this is perfect, because I was thinking about that, because I was looking at this one product. I can't think of what it was, but it was being able to use or buy loans in the virtual space when they had the whole,
metaverse. Yeah.
And I'm like, that would be cool, but we need something in real life, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
We have you. So, man, that's perfect. I guess my last question, so in the minimum loan amount you gave it to us was $500, and then the maximum can go up to 10 million. Do you guys do anything around credit cards or anything like that?
Yeah, we don't have a credit card. It's something that we were discussing internally quite a bit. I think for us, it's more of a distribution method. And so we want to make it as easy as possible to utilize our Bitcoin backed loan. And so what we can do today is we can send you money in a whole bunch of different currencies. So that's something that we offer. So if you take a loan, the loan is denominated in USD. But if you're sitting there and you want to take the loan in Colombian pesos, that's an option. Mexican pesos, there's a whole bunch of different currencies available that we can disperse in. So we want to make it as easy as possible. And the ability to add a credit card disbursement method is interesting. So something that you may see from us in the future, but no promises yet, just exploration phase.
And then my last question for you is, so that's two questions. Obviously, Bitcoin is global. So obviously you can do mortgages globally. Is this product only US based or is it global based? And then how do you underwrite this?
Yeah. So the Bitcoin-backed loan product is available for the most part globally. We do have to exclude some areas that are sanctioned just to maintain our banking services that allow us to issue the fiat disbursement. But that's that's the piece that, you know, and then there is different availability. So the yield products are only available outside of the US and Canada. So there's some other pieces. And then how we underwrite it is we have Bitcoin. And so because Bitcoin is the collateral that we're taking security in, we are their asset-backed loans. So the benefit that to that to the borrower is we don't have to do credit checks. We just need to, we do need to KYC the borrower for compliance purposes. That's part of our regulatory requirements, being a Cayman Islands regulated company. That's a big piece of the regulation that we have there, is maintaining anti-money laundering practices. But outside of that, again, there's no credit checks. So that's a big help for those that are, you know, in some areas that don't even, you know, may not have the credit system that is available to, say, Americans.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, because like I said, I mean, you know, going to other countries, they have credit systems, but it's not the same as like in the US. If you loan a whole, if you have a 620, but you got 10 million in the bank, you can't get a loan, which is mind boggling, right? So that's perfect, right? You have just, all you need is an asset, basically. Asset-based lending is kind of basically what it is, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in some places, I mean, you may have a credit score in one country, but you recently moved to a new country exactly. And it's not established yet. So there's a whole bunch of barriers that can get in the way, and we're trying to eliminate that.
Adam, man, this is perfect, man. You got a wealth of knowledge over here with crypto. So for people that want to listen to you, or if you'd have a podcast or like a YouTube channel or anything, or how can people hear more about what you have to say in the crypto space?
Yeah, I appreciate it, Andre. So my Twitter is Adam Reeds, my full name. Hodl with Ledin is our Twitter for our company. We have a YouTube channel. We're on Instagram, ledin.io, ledin.es for our Spanish speakers. So lots of different information available on our website's ledin.io.
It's a great website. Like I said, I told you earlier, I love the website. I might have to use it for...
Thank you.
I told you I'm doing my private equity firm, and we talked about doing it in Cayman Islands. So that's a whole other conversation for another day. So got to have you back on for sure. But me and you have to connect, because we're bringing this to the people, right? So I know a lot of people will be interested in doing something like that, because if you have the cash, you don't have the credit, and then you can move it over into crypto and then do that to do... buy whatever, because we have properties on the app that are like 60 grand, right? 70 grand. And if someone can't get that financed through a traditional lender, boom, they can just go to Ledin and do the same exact thing. So
yep, that's right.
Definitely have to connect. We will make that happen after this. But Adam, thank you again for coming on, and we got to have you back.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Great to speak with you.
Man, thanks.